Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. This is All Kinds of Family. We chose this one. This is episode 350, The Princess Bride from 1987. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too, and this episode is brought to you by Obey Clothing. Check out the Spring 2024 lookbook on obeyclothing.com.
Obey Clothing. Well, shout out to Obey Clothing. Do I want to try to figure this out now or later? Let's figure it out later. With us tonight to talk about this movie, which came out in my birth year. I'm trying to see what other movies came out in my birth year that we have covered on the show. We did RoboCop. Although I think we had this recently, because I think this year came up recently, because I think I had the same exact thing before. Did I or did I not?
Start.
Things are off to a rollicking start. Obey Clothing?
Yeah.
How do you spell Obey?
O-B-E-Y.
O-B-E-Y? Obey?
Obey, yeah.
I'll get there when I get there. Or maybe I won't. I don't know.
Maybe you won't.
With us tonight to talk about this movie, we have fan favorites. He has not been on in a while, but every time he's on, we have such a good time. We like to do his show. He likes to do our show, I think. I hope.
I hope. Show.
He did choose this movie to talk about. With us tonight, once again, reigning champion in this corner in the black trunks, weighing in at an undisclosed weight, the mean, the venerated Virginian, Nate Milton. Hello, Nate.
Yo, Joes. What is up, fellas? Good to be back.
How are you?
I'm good, man.
Brother, wait. We have something to talk about off the rip.
Uh-oh.
Your boy, Lewis Hamilton, is coming to play for my team next year, and I've been waiting to ask you about it since the news broke. How are you feeling, my friend?
Sports is a crazy thing. You know, full disclosure, the week we're recording this, I'm still recovering from not only WrestleMania, but Caitlin Clark mania.
True.
All the great manias. So I'm spent. But I don't know what to think about my fandom anymore. Like, Kirk Cousins is now my quarterback in Atlanta. That's true.
I totally forgot
about that. Like, this is a guy who's good, but he's got a ceiling. I don't know how to feel about that.
That's Joey's old quarterback too, by the way. Kirk, so watch what you're saying. Yeah,
he's a good quarterback, but he's
a good quarterback.
He's older now, and he's just coming off of an injury. And you know, as someone who is older and has had injuries in his life the past few years, you know, you can't do what you once did, Joe. Being an Atlanta fan of anything is a journey. You know, it's much like the film we're going to talk about. There are trials and tribulations. There's happy moments. There's times when you feel like your franchise is dead, but it's not completely dead. It's only mostly dead, and you can come back from that. So, you know,
I live through it. I live through it. You can too.
I was going to say, you know, we can form a support group for each other.
All right, I looked it up. We did five movies from 1987. We did Predator. We just did Predator, which I think is why I came up. We did RoboCop. We did this movie. We did No Man's Land, Charlie Sheen.
Ah, yes.
And we did
great
Planes,
movie,
Trains,
too.
And Automobiles.
Excellent movies. Yeah, that's a good year, bud. You were born.
Nate, if you don't mind me asking, what year were you born in?
I was born in 1978, so the palindrome year of 87.
We have done from your year. Ooh, we got some good movies from your year. 36 Chamber of Shaolin.
Ooh, excellent movie.
Nice.
Game of Death.
Yep.
Could have been better if he didn't die.
Yes.
Five Venoms. Every Which Way But Loose. Pretty solid. Pretty, pretty, pretty solid. And then, Joe, you're 89, right?
Yes, sir.
The only one we did with Ms. Montez, the cook, the thief, his wife and her lover.
What a movie. That
where
is
Helen
a film.
Mirren got nude a bunch.
The whole time. The whole
banged
time.
Around a bunch.
Yep.
But here we are to talk about The Princess Bride, which again came out in 1987. This is a movie I think I had seen. So I was talking to Joe about this before, and he was on the same page as me, which is why I feel comfortable sharing, Nate. This is a movie that I like. This is a movie that many, 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 many people love. This is a movie that I think a lot of people, this might be their favorite movie of all time. We'll play that in the Letterboxd game when we get there later. I saw this movie, I think, for the first time in high school. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen it since then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the right word. I feel, like, weird talking about it because, like, I want to make sure I do it justice. but I didn't grow up with this movie. I feel like this is the kind of movie that, like, if I had seen when I was little, I don't know if my parents didn't know about it, they didn't, whatever, but, like, I feel like I would have watched this a lot. But having only seen it once, I'm like, yeah, good movie. But I know how much it means to people. And Joe, I think, is that roughly where you fall?
My parents had never introduced me to this movie. I don't know. My cousins, like, we watched, like, a ton of stuff, like, Short Circuit, right? Like, I mean, this should have been on the radar. I feel like they're, like, along the same veins. Like, so, like, it wasn't like we weren't exposed to any of these kind of movies. But, like, The Princess Bride was one that I'd never watched, never remember watching as a kid. And the first time I can remember seeing it was in high school. Since, I've watched it a bunch. But at the same time, I don't have that deep childhood nostalgia for it. So I do really like the movie, but at the same time, like, I don't know if it would hit much, much better as a kid. So I'm interested to hear when Nate saw this first and his experience with The Princess
Bride.
Because
I say it before, but, you know, the way that I book this show is that we have the list of movies, you know, like this lap. Well, actually, let's give us a very special shout out right now to our patrons, Josh Buckley of Whole Lot of Wolves and Michael Moser,
yes,
who sponsors this entire lap, as well as Cassie Wilson, Nick Burris, Alex Ellen, and Justin Kleiman, Brian Rodriguez of High School Slumber Party, Wes Hampton, Jerry Robinson, Dan the Duke, Hayden Renato, D. Donato, Michael McGann, Lane Middleton, Lindsay Lewandowski, the aforementioned, the guest tonight, Nate Milton of the Kings of Sports, Jason Rainey, Tom Price, Mike Gallier, Christian Larson, Taryn Newman, Aaron Willosen, Natalie Absolute, Randy Carter, Josh Goulart, and Jessica Collins, a.k.a.
Montez.
So Michael and Josh sent me the list of movies that we're going to cover, and I just sent it to the people that we love and we want to have on the show, and we're like, pick one. And Nate picked this. I think I went to him either first, second, or third, like, very early in the picking, so, like, almost all the movies this lap were available, and he chose this one. Maybe that's just the best of the options that were available. Maybe it's a movie that he loves. I don't know, but I think it's a movie that means a lot to him. But let's find it. Let's find out. Nate, what's your history with The Princess Bride?
This was, you know, out of the movies, it was a bunch of good movies. It was the best of available, in my opinion. But even if you had The Godfather, or even if you had, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's greatest Dwayne The Rock Johnson film on the list, this probably still would have gotten my vote. Because it does harken back to my youth. And the first time I saw this film, it's funny because now it sounds like some weird kind of inner city foreign exchange program. it was me and my buddy Corey. And Corey was a young Italian kid at the time.
Sicilian?
Yes. So maybe that's why this movie meant so much to him and his family. And obviously, I was not a young Italian kid. And so Corey and I, you know, he'd come over to my house and play, and we'd watch movies, and, you know, we'd watch things like Meteor Man, you know, and Wayans Brothers films, you know, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, and things of that nature. And when I'd go over to his house, you know, there were things like Princess Bride and Home Alone. And
that's awesome.
And so we were sharing cultures through cinema, fellas. And so the first time I saw it, like I said, I was probably between, like, the ages of 9 and 11, somewhere in that range. Immediately, like, Fred Savage jumped out because it's like, oh, it's the kid from that TV show that's on around this time. I think the thing that kind of hooked me was it's good for kids, but I think the thing that kept me coming back to this movie is it's not written at a level where it's insulting to an adult's intelligence. I think there's something to it where it plays with the tropes of the stories that it's dealing with. And there's some really great performances in this movie. And obviously, Joe, being a wrestling fan, Andre the Giant is in this movie.
Andre the Giant is in this movie. That's exactly what I was thinking,
like,
my friend.
It stuck with me. After the first couple times I watched it, you know, because when you're a kid, you just wear VHS tapes out. So I watched it a bunch when I was a kid. And then, you know, through my college years and young adult years, didn't really watch it. And then one day I was at Walmart and they had the, like, $5 VHS bin.
That's my favorite bin in the world. I talk about the $5 Walmart VHS bin all the time, my friend.
And I made a killing in the Walmart $5 VHS bin. I believe this is the same trip where not only did I get Princess Bride on DVD, not only did I get the complete Blade trilogy.
Insane.
On DVD.
One disc.
Yes. I got Princess Bride, the Blade trilogy. I think one of the random Bourne movies. I can't even remember which Bourne it was. And I think I got White Chicks, because White Chicks is the dumbest movie in the world, but it always makes me laugh.
That's a haul.
Yes.
That's a haul, my friend.
All for less you than 30 whole... bucks.
Yeah.
Wait, so how long ago was this? How long was this shopping trip?
This probably would have been about a decade ago.
Okay.
So 2014, 2015?
I don't know. I think there's like a couple different sites. Like so far this year, I mean, there's like the, you know, physical media dying out, but there's been a couple websites that I follow that have like talked about how like important it is to own physical. Like I think Polygon or The Verge or one of them, like they're all owned by the same company. Like they have like a physical media week, but one of these sites talked about the Walmart $5 DVD bin and like how this is like a relic, and like there's like they were like talking about how they were,
yeah,
like
they don't have them anymore,
and people walking by like not even paying attention, but they're like waist deep in this like, you know, pile of schlock or whatever. It's important though. It's important.
Yeah, I love physical media. I love watching films on DVD. One of the things that I regret about the current streaming age that we live in, as much as I do love the convenience of streaming services, I miss DVD commentaries, because there are certain films where I love the films, but I love the commentaries even better. I'd say like Black Dynamite is a film where the commentary track is insane. Tropic Thunder, maybe the best commentary track of any film, where RDJ stays in character throughout the DVD commentary. Like, it's brilliant. And we don't get those things anymore, where you get kind of a behind the scenes glimpse at the process of making these movies.
So going back a bit to Andre the Giant, I always like to try to see if there's like a crossover between, I'm going to get to the making of and everything.
You're so close. You're tiptoeing.
I know.
Never mind.
I'll get there. But I try to see if there's like a crossover between like the movie you're covering and Fast and Furious, right? And like what's hard about these movies is like 14 years, like that's like almost like an entire generation difference. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to like,
yeah,
oh, that guy, like unless it's like a baby James Remar, it's like they're probably not going to cross over, because like a lot of our actors are born in the late 70s. Like they're our age or a little bit old. You know what I mean? Like it's like they're not going to be. But I'm like, Andre the Giant's kind of there, because like it's not really, like, he wasn't in these movies, but he was portrayed in Young Rock, which we covered, but it's just like,
yes.
So there's a kind of a crossover there, but like that's the closest I got to a crossover here, I think.
Although it would be kind of awesome if we got Fred Savage in a Fast and the Furious movie, right?
Sure. You know his brother, Ben Savage, Boy Meets World, ran for like office in WeHo and was like ridiculed. Like he came in like 15th or something. It was awful.
Oh no, I didn't know.
Yes,
that. That's wild.
Yes. So I've got a story that I could share, because my friend has shared this story. One of my co-hosts on the Kings of Sport, as well as the Nubian Wrestling Podcast, is a gentleman by the name of Chris Ely. And Chris Ely is a political science and business professor out in California. And he spends a lot of his summers working on political campaigns, trying to, you know, get people elected and this and that. You know, he worked for Stacey Abrams when Stacey Abrams was running for governor out in Georgia. You know, he flew out there and worked on the campaign. And so he's always trying to, particularly like Democrats and progressives, he's trying to, you know, get as many people excited about the process of our elections. And so, you know, he will get solicited from time to time from aspiring politicians. And one of these aspiring politicians was a gentleman named Ben Savage.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Savage, people hit up my friend Chris and they're like, hey, Professor Ely, you know, we've seen you do great work on a lot of local campaigns. Ben's interested in running. You know, would you be interested in being our consultant? And he's like, sure. You know, what does, you know, his first question, though, to any candidate that he is going to align with, what is his platform? What does he or she stand for?
Good question. I would want to know that, too. It's a pretty good place to start.
And his words, and I quote, the response from the Ben Savage team, I don't know if this was Ben Savage himself or, you know, his secretary or his chief of staff or whoever. Ben Savage's response in terms of a platform or a position or what he stands for, my friend Chris basically said it was just retread platitudes and I'm Ben Savage. Like, that was it. Like, I want to lower taxes and fight crime. And, hey, I'm Ben Savage.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And he was like, thanks, but no thanks, Ben Savage.
The rest of that show is, like, doing the same thing. They're just making money on the podcast, right? Like, it's they're doing the Pod Meets World or whatever. So it's – they're also like, hey, I'm still Topanga. And it's like, yeah, but, like, instead of, like, running for office, it's just, like, give me advertising money, right?
So. It could always been worse. Like, Ben Savage could have been this crazy Alex Jones-type nut job. So at least
oh, yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
didn't go in that route.
It was just very bland.
Yes, very bland, and I've been Savage.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, so here is the trivia behind the scenes for The Princess Bride. The closest I got for Obey Clothing?
Yeah.
I'm thinking the Obey art was made by Shepard Fairey, which is Rachel's last name, but also not. Fairey's close to this, but not, so I'm getting there. 1987 Princess Bride streamable on Disney Plus. A bedridden boy's grandfather reads him the story of a farm boy turned pirate who encounters numerous obstacles, enemies, and allies in his quest to be reunited with his true love. Directed by Rob Reiner, who did When Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me, Spinal Tap, those movies. Written by William Goldman, who it's based on his book, The Princess Bride, S. Morgenstern's classic tale of true love and high adventure, the quote-unquote good parts version. He also wrote Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, All the President's Men, and The Hot Rock, which we cover for this show. Produced by Andrew Scheinman, who did all of Rob Reiner's movies, as well as Rob Reiner himself. Shot by Adrian Biddle, who shot Aliens, V for Vendetta, The Mummy from 1999, and Judge Dredd.
Okay.
Budget of $16 million, made only $31 million. Rotten Tomatoes 96, 94 by the audience. A delightfully postmodern fairy tale. The Princess Bride is a deft, intelligent mix of swashbuckling, romance, and comedy that takes an age-old damsel in distress story and makes it fresh. There is one crazy credits.
Ooh,
are you ready? Nate, yes. Do you know about crazy credits?
I am not familiar with crazy credits.
Okay. Strap in.
I think this is the first crazy credits I've been a part of.
So crazy credits on IMDb were created for movies like Airplane, which like literally made jokes in the credits that like people might have missed otherwise. So like IMDb, the people who were like, you know, cataloging everything about movies were like, we need to put these things somewhere. We need people to know what's going on. Since then, it's just like, credits are in red, or yeah, credits scroll backwards.
Yeah, they're like, there's a scene at the end of this movie, and here it is described in words. It's like, that's not a crazy credit. That's just the credits, but sure.
So we have one crazy credit here. I guess it's crazy. Sort of. Not really. Buttercup is referred to on screen by name, but is only credited as the Princess Bride.
Okay.
Crazy. That's crazy.
Okay.
22 up, 0 down.
Oh yeah, and they're resoundingly popular.
Okay.
There's if you get like more than 2 down votes on any of them, we're like, wow, they fucking hated this. Because it's normally just description of the credits and like 30 up. And you're like, okay, this is the happiest place on earth. Like,
it's,
we wish
so
the whole internet
overwhelmingly
was this
positive. It is wild.
Wow.
Doesn't mean
if only the world could be like crazy credits.
That's what we say, man. We need to take more crazy credits into our actual
That should
lives.
Have been Ben Savage's platform.
Crazy credits. 30 up, no down.
So, talked about him before. Andre the Giant, some trivia about him. When asked to name his favorite thing about making this film, this is very sweet. He said, quote, nobody looks at me. He felt he was treated as an equal instead of people staring at him because of his size. Just like he was just an actor. And he loved that.
Oh, that's really cute. Yeah. I like that. Andre, every story I hear, I mean, like, it from Young Rock on, but, like, every Andre the Giant story I hear is just, like, the cutest thing ever. Like, he had to be, like, the dopest guy.
Yeah, like, especially, like, there was a time where I was really into watching wrestling shoot interviews. And for those that don't know what shoot interviews are, in wrestling, a work is the fiction of wrestling. So, like, when Stone Cold punches The Rock and throws him off a bridge, he really didn't do that because he'd be in jail. Like, that's the fiction. That's the work. A shoot is anything that is real. And so, for a time, shoot tapes and shoot videos on YouTube were really popular. And every single time somebody talked about Andre, like, and I feel like an Andre the Giant story is one of two categories. It's either how he was the nicest guy ever and everybody loved him, or he could drink a 30-pack in, like, an hour.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I've heard of plenty of the Andre the Giant sits down at a bar, drinks 100 beers, and walks out. You know, like,
I think my favorite, I think it was Bobby the Brain Heenan who told it before he passed. Like, they were at a hotel at some event. And, you know, the boys got a little rowdy that night. Everybody went out to the bar. Andre was still drinking in the hotel. Got so drunk, he passed out on the couch at the hotel lobby. And he's Andre the Giant. He's 7'4", 350 pounds, whatever it was. So they can't move him. So Bobby the Brain and a couple of the other wrestlers are like, you know what? He's sleeping. He's peaceful. He's good. Let's just cover him up. So they covered Andre the Giant up with a tarp on this hotel couch. and people thought it was just a piece of furniture that was being renovated, but it was just a passed out Andre the Giant.
Big man. That's awesome. He's one big, big, big man. Speaking of big, in some scenes, because they shot a lot of this on location in England, Robin Wright got very, very cold. And so he would just put his hand on or over her head, and it would cover her entire head and just like warm her body.
Like a hat. His just hand like was hat, just like a hat. Hand. And that's awesome. Good fact. That's a fun one.
So The Princess Bride, the book, is Rob Reiner's favorite book of all time. William Goldman, who wrote the book but also wrote the screenplay, was reluctant to let someone else make it because it was his favorite thing he ever read. He had ever written. So unlike Roald Dahl, when we, you know, now we can talk about it. That episode's been out. That podcast, you know, completed its run. when we did Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, he's just like, fuck you, don't make my movie. Don't make my book into a
this
movie.
This is trash. Like, I have never seen it, but it's trash.
He's just like, I don't know. But then like I think he went on to love this.
Oh, cool. Good.
There is like a long history of people trying to make this movie. In the 70s, he tried to make it himself. William Goldman tried to make it himself. And this young up-and-coming bodybuilder named Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, I want to play Fezzik. And they're like, we really want Andre the Giant. And Andre the Giant's like, no, I'm a wrestler. I'm not an actor. I'm not doing this.
Okay.
So then in the 80s, when this movie is actually getting made for real, they're like, hey, Arnold, do you want to do this? He's like, no, I'm an actor. Like, it just like it didn't work out. And then Andre's like, I'll do it. Liam Neeson auditioned for Fezzik. Rob Reiner, when he heard that, laughed because he's quote unquote only 6'4". Kareem was offered the role of Fezzik, but couldn't make it work with his NBA schedule, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which is
this movie with Kareem in it would be pretty good, too. Yeah. And I love Andre the Giant, but I think Kareem would have been really awesome in this. Wow.
And then Billy Crystal went on to work with Kareem in that, was it From Paris or something? Yeah, like Billy, it's a Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan joint,
I think.
Forget Paris. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar plays a big part in it because Billy Crystal's this ref that has anger problems and he's got all his life is falling apart. And I
think I know this one now that you say that. Like him being a ref?
He throws Kareem out like in his last game and he's like, Kareem, you're ejected. He's like, you can't throw me out. This is my farewell game. Well, then farewell, Kareem. And get Kareem out. And then
I
at the end of that
movie,
it's dedicated to Andre. The movie is dedicated to Andre the Giant because I think it was right after Andre passed.
Interesting. What a connection there, bud. Thank you for that one. I think I remember this from like being a kid. Like this is a movie that like my parents watched. You know what I mean? Like it on VHS rented from Blockbuster when I was a kid or something. Wow, you unlocked a brain.
My mom used to go on these weird kicks where like she went on a big Whoopi Goldberg kick where we watched every Whoopi Goldberg movie that Whoopi Goldberg made, including like Eddie, where she's the basketball coach of the Knicks.
Oh, yeah.
And then she went on a Billy Crystal kick. And From Paris was one of the Billy Crystal movies we watched when she was on one of her Billy Crystal kicks.
Moms love Billy Crystal, man. They do. My mom the same.
Well, I will tell you, based on the Billy Crystal trivia that I found, everyone on set loved him too. Rob Reiner had to leave set during his scenes because he laughed so hard that he felt sick. And Mandy Patinkin did maybe all of his stunts in the movie. But the only injury he got on set was a bruised rib trying to stifle laughter during his scenes with Billy Crystal. People just like, this guy,
his rib, that was
is at the peak of his powers.
Okay.
So Wallace Shawn was a second choice for Vizzini behind Danny DeVito, who would have been good. I also thought, you know, Costanza, Jason Alexander could have been good here too.
Oh, yeah.
Just a short, bald guy, right?
Yeah.
Wallace Shawn was apparently nervous the entire time making the movie. He was, like, sweating because he's like, I don't think I'm not Sicilian. They're not going to want me. But then Rob Reiner was like, look, your voice is how I heard his voice in the book. You got it. Don't worry about it. The Buttercup role, though, is one of the more all over the place. William Goldman, writer, said Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia, was the ideal Buttercup.
Okay.
Yeah. Courtney Cox auditioned. Meg Ryan auditioned.
How old was Courtney Cox? I feel like these are kind of younger, right? Or like, are they all Robin Wright's age?
Robin Wright was
older.
Born in 66. Mm-hmm. Courtney Cox born in 64. She's actually older.
Wow, I would have never guessed that.
Courtney Cox, I just listened to a whole podcast about Bruce Springsteen's music, and I forgot that she was in Dancing in the Dark. She was in one, like, she broke out because she was in a Bruce Springsteen music video. Yep.
I didn't know that either.
They're oh my God, this girl is so beautiful. And, like, you know, 3 years later, she was on Friends.
Wow. Okay.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy.
Okay. Crazy credits. There we go.
Crazy credits.
30 thumbs up.
Other directors who tried to make this movie, Francois Truffaut, which is wild, like just French New Wave. Okay, sure. Robert Redford, Norman Jewison, and Richard Lester, all big names there. Mandy Patinkin plays Inigo Montoya. So here's Joey trivia. This is crazy Joey credits.
Okay.
My username all over the internet is Soul Popped from the TV show Dead Like Me, in which I was introduced, I guess, to Mandy Patinkin because he is like the male lead in that show. Mm. So I know him from this show that basically no one saw, but he's like, it's him and Ellen Muth as the stars. But he said that Inigo Montoya is his favorite role he's ever played. He says two or three times a day people say the line to him.
I believe it. I mean, like, and even still to this day, I believe that if he's like anywhere that he hears this.
Loves it. He's like, I'm frankly thrilled about it. I can't believe that I got to be in The Wizard of Oz. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, I can't believe I got to play in a thing that meant so much to so many people that, like, even now, you know, 40 years later, whatever, people still say to me two, three times a day, like, that's pretty cool.
I'm glad that you love it. This like, reminds me of, like, I see, even before they reannounce Happy Gilmore 2, Shooter McGavin, like, he's still in character to this day, and he seems to love it as much as you just described that story. Mm. So I'm glad that it's not, like, one of these things, like, I absolutely regret that. This is the worst period of my life, and, like, I never want to see that again. Like, to embrace it and have the joy that it brought everybody else bring you joy is a cool thing. So I'm happy for him.
The only other trivia, this is a Criterion movie, Spine 948. Just came out, like, last year, I think. They finally released it on Criterion. Mm. It was made into a video game in 2008, which I have zero memory, zero recollection of. Mandy Patinkin, Wallace Shawn, and Robin Wright were the only cast members to provide the voices for their characters. Sure. And there have been a couple different attempts to adapt this into a musical, Joe, but none have stuck. But
good. What system was this video game? I'm stuck on this video game now.
2008 is probably Xbox 360, PS3 era.
That's insane.
Yeah, I found it because I was trying. I'll say what I was trying to
do. We're doing a movie tie-in game 20 years after the movie.
Yeah. Get that money while you can, man.
But that is all the trivia I have. I have a couple other things that we will talk about, like sort of that happened in the movie. But let's take it away, Joe. Initial thoughts, rethoughts, however you want to phrase it, The Princess Bride.
I find this a very joyous movie. I like watching it. Rachel loves this movie. This was a big movie to her childhood and her nostalgia. She said she saw the movie first and then read the book. She says that the book is better than the movie, even though it's like kind of Inception-y in the sense that it's, you know, three stories deep, right? You know, you're like reading a story about a story about a story type situation. And yeah, I can't find anything wrong with it. I really, really, really enjoy it. Even watching it now, like I said, we watch it late at night multiple times a year. So it's a good one for us.
Nate, how was the watch this time around for you?
The watch this time around wasn't as jarring as the watch, you know, when I went through most of my young adult life without having seen it since I was a kid. You know, I think I watched it maybe a year or so ago with my nieces. So it was still pretty fresh when I watched it this week. I think the thing that always hits me with this movie is it's a small thing, but I think it, and again, I've never read the book, so I don't know, you know, what part of this is from the book or if this is completely like a Rob Reiner Goldman thing for the screenplay, but I love the framing device.
Yeah.
With Fred Savage being this sick little kid and grandpa's reading him a story, and there's parts in the movie where Fred Savage is interrupting. He's like, you know, what happened next, Grandpa? You want me to finish the story or not, kid? And,
yeah.
And then, you know, when we get a romantic scene, I don't want to see that mushy stuff, Grandpa. And then finally at the end, he's like, did they kiss, Grandpa? Like, I think the pacing of this film is so well done. And you're right. It's a sweet film, but I don't feel like it's saccharine. Like it's not overly schmaltzy.
Nope.
Like there's some really funny stuff. There's some things that I think are funnier as an adult than as a kid when you're watching this. I really enjoy this movie. And I forgot, like I knew the main cast, but I forgot like just how many great people are
so
in
great.
This movie. And it's like,
huge
wow,
cast.
Yeah, the cast is great. So yeah, it still hits for me.
How did your nieces like it when they watched it? Did it hit for them?
It's funny because my youngest and my oldest nieces liked it better than the middle niece. And so I think because my
interesting.
So my oldest niece, she is getting ready to head to college. So she's 17, 18. And my youngest niece is like 8, 9.
These are great ages on both sides. Yeah.
I feel like, and again, I might be reaching, but I feel like my youngest niece is watching it like through the eyes
as
of
a child.
As a child. Right. And I think my oldest niece still, you know, I still think she's a kid. She'll always be a kid to me, even when she's like 45. but I think she's old enough to know, old enough now to catch some of the humor and some of the more adult themes in the movie. And then my middle niece was just on her phone. She's like, "Yeah, it was okay, Uncle Nate." So two out of three ain't bad.
No, but I mean, if you're like a teenage, like early teen, preteen,
middle niece is like 14, so she's too cool for school.
Too cool for school. I get it. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. She'll come back to it when she's 20 and she'll be like, "Man, that movie was great, Uncle Nate."
I feel like the thing that stuck out to me this time is how much of this movie, even only having seen it once, is, I'm going to use Brian's word because I think it's the only word that matters or the only word that really applies. How much this movie just feels iconic, like a thing that like people just know. Mm-hmm. Like I had not seen this in literally maybe 20 years. And like the first like half of this movie, like I didn't have it memorized, but it's like iconic scene after iconic scene after iconic scene. I'm just like, this is crazy. And, like the back half, I don't remember as well. And I don't really remember the prince like following them as well. But like all the characters, like Nate, you were saying, like all the different casting, all the different set pieces, all the different lines. It just feels crazy somewhat that all of these things are in the same movie. Like,
yeah,
it feels almost unbelievable that like there's this much stuff that just like hits.
Yeah, like that first 30 minutes is pretty much just like tattooed into your brain, right?
Yeah.
Like the whole thing, like from the setup to all of it. So I'm with you. Yeah, it is very iconic. And the lines are iconic. We've heard them over and over again, referenced in everything and referenced by our friends and everybody. So yeah, it's super iconic.
I think going back to what Nate was saying about the framing of it, I think it's so smart that like by telling a story, they can jump around. Like things don't have to really make sense because like the kid can be like, "I don't want to like skip this part. Like I don't want this part or whatever." Or like what happened? Like when he's like you hear Columbo like flipping through the book and like where was I? And, like just like the eels, whatever. And it's funny that like it makes sense as a story. And like there's long stretches where like you're just hearing the story, watching the movie, whatever. But they have the ability to just be like, "Nah, it's just the story, man." Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we're skipping ahead.
Yeah. And I think to that point, you know, I feel like, because the next thing I was going to say was, I don't feel like the movie ever drags Joey. And I think part of that framing device helps it. You know, it helps us move the story along. And then when you're talking about the lines, Joe, it feels like one of those cultural osmosis movies where even if you haven't seen the film, like
you have,
like, right. Like, it's like, like, I know that line. Like, where have I heard that? It's like, oh, this is where it originated. So, yeah, it's got bars, as the kids would say.
That's what that was, like, the first thing that I remember about it. Like, my biology teacher in high school, like, he was talking, and he went on, like, a fucking Princess Bride tangent. And it was just like, have you guys ever seen this movie? And, like, half the class had it, half, like, I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'm Inigo Montoya. I'm like, you know, you killed my father, prepare to die. And like, he did like the whole like shit spiel. And I was like, what is he talking about? And everybody else knew it. And I was like, okay, I got to go watch this movie. And that's what inspired me to do it.
I got a callback. So, you know, I don't know if you guys know, like, obviously I do podcasts, but I'm also a broadcaster. Like, one of my day jobs. I've got many day jobs, which is why I'm always busy. But one of my day jobs is a broadcaster, and there was a time where I was, you know, trying to do some freelance work, and I was sending demo air checks to radio stations around the country, and I was with an agency that, you know, for sportscasters, and they were like, "Hey, we got this interesting opportunity, but you know, I don't know if you'd be interested." Obviously this guy didn't know who I was, obviously he knew who I was cause I was paying him, but he didn't know like my interest because he was like, you know, it's for something called the Madden Bowl. And I was like, did you say Madden Bowl? And he was like, yeah, we need somebody to commentate these games on the Madden Bowl. And I was like, I might be interested in that. So when I sent in my demo reel, one of the lines I threw in, because what they did was they gave us footage like from the last year's Madden Bowl. And so we had to commentate over it, like not only comment on, and it was really weird because you have to comment on the video game as if it's an actual game, but also the competitors playing against each other. So there's like levels to it.
Okay.
And so one of the lines I slipped in was, you know, the two great mistakes line, you know, because one of the players made a mistake. And I was like, oh, Michael Skimbo, one of the greatest players that we've seen in the history of the Madden Bowl. But he made a grave error. You know, he made three errors and two of them were, you know, the two great mistakes. And then the other player he was playing was named Church. And I was like, and the third error is he threw a pass across the middle against Church's defense. You just don't do that. And I think the Princess Bride line was what got me the callback because I made it to the next round of auditioning. Ultimately, I didn't get it, but yeah, it was just like,
I wish you would have.
Like, everybody knows this movie, even if they've never seen it, man.
There are not many movies, I think, that have permeated like pop culture in a way like this has, like Back to the Future has, I think, My Cousin Vinny has, like other ones we've done for the podcast, but I don't think that there's very, like, even people like me have only seen this once, like, it's still a thing that, like, you know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's Star Wars and stuff like that, but I feel like franchises, there's a little bit of a different thing. I mean, Back to the Future is also a franchise, but, like, there's something about, and maybe that's just for people our age, I don't know, like, maybe it's movies that we grew up with, or were readily available, or always on VHS, or always on DVD later, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what that is, I don't know if there's different, like, maybe we're skewed to these because they came out and were around as we were growing up, but it does feel like this is one that, like you're saying, Nate, everyone knows, everyone has seen, and everyone except for apparently my co-host on How to Win the Lottery, Bob, likes. He's just like, I think the movie's wildly overrated. I was just like,
whoa, jeez. Wow.
He's okay, like, but who am I to put down what anybody else likes? I'm just like, all right, fair.
You know, to that point, I feel like obviously our age group, and I'm a little bit older than you guys, but our age group, like, it resonates with us because we watched it. But I feel like something like Deadpool, when Deadpool references, you know, this movie, I think it gives a younger generation, they're like, okay, that was kind of funny, but what, I know they're referencing something. What are they referencing? And then it's like, okay, Princess Bride, let me check this out. So I think it's one of those movies where, you know, it's in the cultural zeitgeist, but also if you're a parent, like, it's one of those movies that I feel like gets passed down from parent to kid.
It definitely does.
So it's always going to be around.
I think so, too. I think it'll hold a test of time, too, for that reason. Like, it will constantly be, you were saying you showed your nieces the movie. I think this is going to be, you know, just one of those things that just keeps getting rolled down forever because it's wholesome and, like, it won't go bad. I don't think so.
This entire lap, as we have been sponsored by Michael and Josh, we are doing the 80s cult movies lap. So we've been talking about the movie for a while, but our conversation starter has been, of all the things in the movies, even the movies that aren't taking place in the 80s, you know, movies like Fast and Furious, 2001 and beyond, we are still every episode picking out our most 80s moment, our most 80s thing in the movie. Could be a line.
Anything.
Could be a moment, could be a character, could be a scene, could be an object.
Poster on his wall, whatever you want.
I have two. I think one is obvious, one is maybe less obvious, but I will hold off for now. Joe, what was your pick for most 80s moment?
Him playing hardball on Commodore 64 to start the film is the most 80s thing in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
That's one. I got Rachel's pick, too, because it's really good. So I'm going to save it. What was yours, Joey? And Nate, whenever you...
Do you have a pick?
I mean, that's a good one. Like, that's a good one. I think for me...
You can wait and think. I'll pass for this round.
Come back to me.
I think so. My one thing that I'm gonna skip because Joe, that was basically yours. I think like his entire bedroom is like, what if the 80s just threw up like just like decorations? Mm-hmm. There's like clothes and video games and toys and posters and whatever. Just like this is
sports,
all
sports. I'm gonna, him in a Bears jersey.
I think that's me because obviously the sports connection. Like that was the time of Chicago.
Chicago
has not been hot since then. Like that, you're talking 85 Bears era. You're talking Cubs. You talk like you're just getting into the Jordan Bulls era. Like Chicago was hot.
Sports wise, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to hear Rachel's pick?
I want to hear Rachel's pick, but I want to give my real one because I'm not going to
give me your
mine.
Real one, please. Go ahead.
I just think this is something that like would only exist in the 80s movie. But the Rouses, the rodents of unusual size, of just like a small actor in a robot, a rodent suit, is just like, Yeah, that's an 80s movie. Like, you're not gonna do, like, you're gonna do that like with some kind of like weird CGI today or whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, but they're just like, no, we threw like a small person in a suit and had him attack some people. Just like, yeah, okay, it's the 80s.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. In a similar note, Rachel's pick, because I always ask her now that we're watching these movies and we watch them all together. I was like, what's your pick for the most 80s movie, like most 80s part of this movie? She just goes, Fred Savage.
Yeah.
Just him existing in this movie was her most 80s pick of this movie.
Do we know where this movie takes, like where he lives? Is it Chicago? Like, I mean, he's wearing...
I would guess so. It feels like it.
Because it also feels like this is not a John Hughes movie, but all his movies are Chicago. But it feels just like, oh, like growing up in the 80s, that's a Chicago movie. It's like, why? It's like, I don't know, rich white kid, Chicago? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, if not Chicago, it's like Chicago adjacent, somewhere in the Midwest.
I had a thought while watching this movie. So Buttercup thinks that Cary Elwes and Robin Wright fell in love in this movie. Like, they were smitten by each other. I didn't look into their personal lives, but like every single scene, they were just like, they couldn't take their eyes off each other, right? And Elwes even said, quote, I couldn't concentrate on much of anything after that first encounter with Robin. And apparently their final scene they filmed together, they have to ask like one more take. I need another take. And like, they're just like, and everybody else probably just like, oh my God. But so she thinks that he has been killed by the Dread Pirate Roberts, right? And then he comes back as Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, you're actually the man I love. Do you think in a world where we are maybe about to get a Fast and Furious reboot, could the name Dominic Toretto be a name handed down to the hottest racer in the Southern California scene?
Oh, could Dom be Dread Pirate Roberts? And could, like, you have a new Dominic Toretto? I think it would have to be familial. I think, yes, there'd have to be a bloodline to it. That's the only reason, Joey, why I don't think that this works, that because of the core of family in Fast and the Furious, that he could pass it to maybe his son or like Vince's son, that he's named Dominic, could like kind of assume the role. And I get that that's not like a bloodline, but I think that that would be close enough. It couldn't be that you just like meet a, like Brian could never have assumed the Dominic Toretto, even though he's kind of like taking that racing role.
I was just trying to think, like, that's the closest thing we have to like a name that means a thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, people know Dread Pirate Roberts, right? But like, is there another Fast and Furious thing that could be passed down?
Yeah, I think
family.
Yeah, for Dom Toretto, like it.
I mean, well, sorry. Drift King is kind of that, right?
Yeah.
But less exciting.
For Dom Toretto, I feel like you're saying, Joe, it would almost have to be like a Mexican luchador lineage, where, you know, we go from Santo to El Hijo del Santo, or Rey Mysterio to Rey Mysterio Jr., where it's not the same Dom Toretto, but like it has to be, if not bloodline adjacent, like within the family. You just can't be like you just can't be some random dude off the street and become Dom Toretto.
Like, got good at like, even if you're the best at racing for that era, like you're not just Dom Toretto now, you know. Like, if it was like his cousin, his son, whatever. But yeah, I think so.
No, but
too.
I mean, like, look, in this world, it's not like it's gonna happen. Like, we're only seeing movie versions of this world, right? It's not like there'd just be some racer who, like, comes up. It's like, it would be written in that it wouldn't be just some racer off the street. It would be, like, Carter Verone's nephew. Or, you know what I mean? Like, there'd be, like, a history there. So it wouldn't be just, like, some random-ass person. I mean, maybe it could. I don't know. Who knows?
I can see, like, an end in sight at some point. Like, 11B, that, like, somebody, and they're like, is he the new Dom? Or like, he's like, you have to take care of the family now, and like passes on the torch of caring for the which I think would be kind of the same thing as you assuming Dread Pirate Roberts.
I mean, the answer was right there in front of me. It is Drift King, but I was just thinking, like, it, that feels too
Drift
tangential.
King is so lame. Yeah,
I know.
Comparatively, you're right.
So the scene where they sword fight, which is wildly early. Like, it feels like, in my memory, having only seen this once, it feels like that's, like, the climactic scene. But it's, like, that's, like, 20 minutes in the movie where they're
very
just
early.
Big...
Yep.
So they trained for months with these two guys, Peter Diamond and Bob Anderson, who between them had been in the Olympics, had worked on James Bond movies, Lord of the Rings movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars movies. They coached Errol Flynn and Burt Lancaster. It's basically like all this cinematic swashbuckling, real life Olympics, epi fighting, whatever, like all like fencing. They're like, these guys are the best of the best. Every single time they had a down moment on set, they spend practicing sword fight. They're just like, we need to make sure that this looks good. Mm. They showed Rob Reiner. He's just like, that ain't it. Not good.
What?
He's like, it's only a minute long. And I need like a 3 minute long thing. Mm. Like, I need you guys to fix this shit. And okay. So they're like, all right. So they go back to the drawing board and they added a bunch of steps. They watched more swashbuckling movies, re-choreographed the scene, and ended up with a 3 minute, 10 second fight that took them a week to film. But it works. It's very cool.
Looks amazing. Yeah.
And the only thing one of them did not do is at one point, Cary Elwes does a flip, and that was a stunt double. But everything else you see is them, just, you know, actors. Like, I'm never surprised when actors can do stuff, but like, this is so intensive of a scene for two people who are just like stage actors to do. Like, no, you need to learn how to sword fight like an Olympian. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that scene is amazing. And Cary is amazing. Like, I feel like, Cary's had a solid career in Hollywood, but if I'm back in 87, right, 88, 89, like after this comes out, like that's my guy. If I'm Hollywood, I'm like, yo, we need more Cary Elwes movies because he's a good actor. He's handsome. You know, he can do some physical things. Like, yeah, like Cary should have been. I'm trying to think of like who's the problem.
Paul Walker. Mm. He gives me big Paul Walker vibes.
Well, I was trying to think
vibes,
of somebody problematic that we could just like write over okay. for Cary. Okay. Like, who was the problematic okay. action star of that era?
Oh, that we could have just like plugged in.
Yes, so that way okay. that person never gets shine.
Okay, okay.
Cary Elwes should have been Superman instead of Dean Cain.
Oh, well, speaking of Superman, I did not mention this before. Christopher Reeve was considered for the role of Wesley. So they're like, we almost have a Superman in this movie,
yeah,
but we don't.
That's my
what has Cary Elwes done? Oh, I guess he was in the new Mission Impossible movie, but it feels like he is a guy.
He was in that Jim Carrey movie. Was it Liar Liar?
He was in Liar Liar. Oh, he God. Was in Twister, but not the upcoming new Twisters. Mm. Operation Fortune Ruse. He's still working. He was in the Rebel Moon.
Okay.
I don't know, man. Oh, he was in Saw and Saw 2. Mm. But it does feel like, it's always crazy to me that, like, because I don't think he's like an actor like defined by one role, but it's like, you are the star of everyone's favorite movie. What else did you do? Just like, I was a Liar Liar. It's like, what?
Yeah, he's just like, and like, again, not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, he's had a very solid career. Like, he's just a working actor, but it's like, dude, you're in this cultural phenomenon, this cult classic. You know, you should be in more stuff.
I've never heard this as a descriptor. Cary Elwes was the third son born to interior designer / shipping heiress Tessa Kennedy. His mother, shipping heiress. It's like, okay.
Mm, maybe that's why he didn't work as much. He's like, I got that shipping money, man.
Yeah. I have just a general question for you guys. Mm-hmm. What is your actual favorite scene of this movie?
Ooh.
We talked about the sword fighting one, but like, what is your actual favorite scene of this movie? Like, what's the one that like you think and you're like, yeah, that was it. That hits for me.
The sword fighting is up there. The one that I think of first is not my favorite is the poison.
Yes,
cup
absolutely.
Scene.
That's amazing.
That's what I think of first when I think of this movie.
The whole bit, the whole like Sicilian, yes. The whole thing. It like that
your
is
first
super,
mistake.
You're right.
And just
yes.
The way Wallace Shawn dies in that scene is amazing. I think that's a great scene. Inigo Montoya finally getting his revenge.
Oh yeah,
is one that always resonates with me.
Yep,
I think anytime for me where Wesley is like, "As you wish," like that's a line that stuck with me, like my whole life. And hearing that, you know, Robin and Cary had such a connection, like it comes through, and it's like, yeah, like it. There is a obviously there's like this puckish roguishness to Wesley, but there's an earnestness. There's a genuineness behind his words. So those would probably be. And when he rolls down the hill saying, "As you wish," that always gets a laugh.
And then she rolls down following him.
Yes.
I think my favorite scene would be the Inigo Montoya. I can't even say it. I'm trying to say it too quickly. The Inigo Montoya revenge scene, because like the whole movie, like he's not the star, mm-hmm. but you're rooting for him to get the revenge. Like you find out like, oh, the guy who killed his father obviously is in this movie. He's going to get his chance. And then he gets there and like he gets stabbed like immediately. It's just like, oh no. Yeah. Like, are we going to have like a sad ending here? And then like, no, he gets it.
Here's how good Mandy Patinkin is in that scene. And again, I don't know Mandy Patinkin's heritage, but growing up, I thought this dude was Spanish. And then a few decades later, I see this man on one of the law shows. I can't even remember which legal show it was. And I'm like, that is not a Spanish gentleman.
Oh, he's in Criminal Minds.
Criminal Minds.
He's the star of Criminal Minds, yeah.
And I'm like, that is not a Spanish gentleman. Like, he's a hell of an actor.
I think just like for me, the whole idea of Dread Pirate Roberts and like a symbol or something does actually like the fear comes from the name or the symbol of it, and like how you can pass that is like what always stuck with me. And I like that, like, you know, in a sense of like you can keep a memory going type situation. So like that was always like my favorite part. And like in explaining that, like, there is no real Dread Pirate, like I'm not Dread Pirate Roberts. Like, he wasn't even Dread Pirate Roberts, mm-hmm. but like we just keep the lineage down. That was like always like the part of the movie that like really hit for me and stuck. So I think that's what like my favorite scene is, although it's not like, I don't think, the most iconic or interesting, but like that's what my specific pick was. Mm.
Like, the Fred Savage, like, is this a kissing story? Like, this feels like a movie that's like, this is for girls. It's like, no, like, the whole movie's like, no, it's not just for girls, right? It feels like there's, like, a little bit of a magic trick where it's like, of course, Rachel, like, she's a girl. But it's like, no, well, like, everybody, like, there's a reason.
And half the movie's sword fight. There's a three-minute sword fighting scene in it, right? It's not for girls. That's
and they almost
the
go out
point.
Of their way to, like, not do kissing scenes, right? And Tully's like, no, I don't think, how's it end?
Yes, yes. I think that's, again, like, I can't credit enough the framing device, because I feel like if you just made this movie like straight as this fantasy movie set in this world, it would still be good, guys, but I don't think it hits with
I don't think
it hits nearly as well without that framing device. And yeah, like it's a beautiful magic trick, as you say, Joey, where yeah, this is a story for boys and girls. And you know, you can see yourself in all of these characters, and there's so many characters that remind you of people in your family. And mm-hmm. like, you know, like my uncle reminds Billy Crystal reminds me of my uncle, or Andre the Giant reminds me of my other uncle. Or, you know, it's a well-made movie, well-cast movie. And it's if they tried to remake this today, I don't know. I don't think they could pull it off.
Remake. I don't think you touch it. I think that everybody has too much reverence for it, and it's too much in the zeitgeist that you can't touch it. Anything that you would do would just be almost a one-to-one remake, and then you'd be like, why did you remake it, right? Because, like, you can't leave anything out that's so iconic. Yeah, and that's actually great for it, because, like, I never want to see a remake of this movie. I never want to see a sequel to this movie. I just want it to just live as it is. Hey, man, we have 10 Fast and the Furious movies. In the age of franchises, it's incredible that somebody hasn't tried to remake this movie.
Well, yet. I will. Okay, so I was saying to you before we started recording that I did research for our next two Patreon bonus episodes we're going to record this week, and it's going to come out in the next handful of weeks, whatever. But one thing that I found, both with Little Shop of Horrors and this movie, and also one of the movies we're going to record this week, and it's going to come out soon, is they're all trying to be remade, or they're trying to be adapted. And it's like this thing where it's like, there's a very weird, like, I know that we're covering very big movies. Like, people love this movie. People love Little Shop of Horrors or whatever. But it's like, to see it pop up over and over again, like, three times in a month of research, like, this thing from the 80s that people love is trying to become another thing. It's like, just have another idea. Just stop doing this.
Yeah.
Like, over and over. Like, I get it. I get the appeal. People love this movie. They're like, we can make some more money. And, like, there's already the idea there. Like, people, like, the brand, the IP is so strong. It's like, yeah, but, like, leave it alone.
Like, to your point, to Nate's point, steal the framing device and make Space Princess Bride and make, you know what I mean? Like, you can make, like, we had Jumanji and we had Zathora. Zathora wasn't great, but, like, yep. You can make Space Jumanji if you want.
Yeah.
Like, you could, they could do Princess Bride that isn't, like, old swashbuckling fantasy and do like any type of modern sci-fi, and it would still, you could use and play with the same conventions that they have, and it could be a nice homage to it without remaking it, readapting it type situation.
And then look, if Space Jumanji does not work out, you can make two more Jumanji movies. Like, everything's on the table. Just try something different.
So what I hear you saying, Joey, is we need Dwayne The Rock Johnson to spearhead Space Princess Bride.
So if he was, because he, of course, he would be in it, would he be, again, we're not remaking it, but like, would he be the Fezzik role? No. Or what role would he play?
No, he would not be the Fezzik, and I will tell you
why. Oh, he would be Wesley. He'd be Cary Elwes,
yes,
right?
Because Dwayne The Rock Johnson is like, I'm not playing the bumbling giant. I'm going to be the swashbuckling hero, even though I'm 55 years old and I can't swashbuckle no more, even though he did have a good match at WrestleMania this year.
I would really like him to be like the Columbo role, reading the story. Like the narrator.
Right, right.
Like the that's a Young Rock framing device, right? Where it's like, I'm not in the story, but I'm in the story. I am the story.
That's a good spot for him.
There is a little bit of a sad thing about Andre the Giant, that his back was so messed up from years and decades or whatever of wrestling that like he couldn't walk around. Cary Elwes on his back, so he had to like build like these little stairs for him to be on as they're like struggling, because he just couldn't carry a normal sized act. Like, it just, it's a bummer, you know.
That is a bummer. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So if DJ is remaking this, and he is either the Columbo role, the Peter Falk role, or the Cary Elwes role, maybe he's both. Who knows? Who are we casting? Do it. Maybe keep it in the Fassiverse or adjacent or whatever. Let's recast Buttercup, Inigo Montoya, and the Prince.
Okay. And are we sticking to Fastiverse actors?
I mean, not necessarily only Fastiverse, but like, how about names that are like, that make sense within this world, kind of?
Okay. I like, for Buttercup, we take L, Han's daughter that we just got rid of.
Anna
for
Sawai.
No reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Her. And we make her Buttercup, because I mean, she can do it pretty decent.
Is The Rock also Cary Elwes? Is he also Wesley? Or is, because that's a wild.
Said, no. He can't do not now. Not now.
That's some.
I mean,
Cook
I imagine it is Paul Walker, but I mean, that's
also
playing
like
fast
50.
And
if
loose.
He was still alive, he's also like 50. You know what I mean?
Fuck yeah.
So now we've got two different scripts here floating around Hollywood. If Rock is Wesley, then I think Charlize can be Buttercup.
Ooh, okay.
Now, if Rock is not Wesley and we need a younger actor for Wesley.
I mean, Timothée Chalamet.
Obviously, that's always my choice.
He's not in the Fastiverse, he's forever in Joe's heart.
I think that we give the Andre the Giant role to Cena. Because I think he would play bumbling idiot pretty well. Mm-hmm. And he's big. You know, I don't think he's big enough to like assume that kind of vibe, but... But like I like he would play dumb good enough for me to enjoy it.
I was trying to think who was like physically. He wouldn't do it though, because I think he would. He's an actor. He feels above these Dwayne Johnson joints. But Batista would make a really interesting Fezzik.
Excellent call. But as we know, he only does film.
He does film. Yes.
Not Fast and the Furious movies. So he would be a little offended if we asked him to do that. But
do we have, who would play the Wallace Shawn role? Is that Kevin Hart? Never mind. That's Kevin Hart.
Yes, yes. That's a brilliant casting.
Yeah, I'm Sicilian. What of it?
Hey, that was your first mistake, man. Hey, you know, I don't have the poison. You have the poison. You have a drink poison? You have a drink poison?
Mm-hmm. Oh my and God. We could also have the youngest DJ, Dewey, from Young Rock
as
Fred Savage.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Oh, that's
cast
sick
this
bed.
Movie today.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Okay, I want to see a remake of this movie. Brilliant. You guys nailed it.
And they're in space.
You sold me. And they're in space.
The Princess Dwayne. Joe, can you explain why our sponsors Obey? I stopped thinking about it, but I don't know. Obey?
Nate, do you want to take it? You got it?
Does it have to do with the Andre the Giant? Obey iconography?
Yeah. Yes. Shepard Fairey's first Obey picture was Andre the Giant's face, and it's called Obey.
Yep.
Which is a very cult-like order.
So I had Shepard Fairey, but I was just thinking Rachel Shepard. I was too transfixed on the name as opposed to the thing.
Yeah, like the Andre the Giant face is Obey.
That was hot for a minute.
I still love Obey. I just like Shepard Fairey in general, but
I need to say something. I don't know if it's a hot take or not. maybe I just don't love him, but the Billy Crystal stuff in this, I'm just like, you guys are hurting yourself over this. Like, I don't love it. I don't dislike it.
Yeah, it's okay. It feels... But you telling me all the stories of them cracking ribs over it didn't really make sense to me.
Like, I get that he is, you know, it's probably one of those things where, you know, Joe, when we watch a Zac Efron movie, there's like, they're making jokes and the credits are like all the jokes that weren't in the movie or whatever, right? Like, or the John Cena, the Ricky Stenicky, like his song parodies. Yes. It's like, they probably did like hours of that scene. They had like, you know, 90 seconds in the movie. And that I get, but it's just like, okay.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah, I like it, but I think the way I look at it is Billy Crystal lifting up the material? Like, is if we put this in the hands of a lesser skilled comedic actor, would these scenes have fallen flat? And so I'm in my mind, hearing this trivia about, you know, everybody just, it's a laugh riot with Billy Crystal on the set. I'm thinking maybe they had to tone him down. Maybe he was ad-libbing a little too much. Maybe he was going off script a little too much. And this is like Billy, give me a straight take and then do your ad-lib thing. And they went with the straight take every time.
That makes sense. That, I think that's fair. I can see that.
Yeah. Frustrating, but fair.
Have fun storming the castle is a great line, though.
Yeah.
It is. It really is.
I'm trying to see. Christopher Guest, also in this movie. Christopher Guest, director extraordinaire of many, many very funny movies. Also in Spinal Tap, which they are also doing a sequel to Spinal Tap because, of course, they are. When he hit Cary Elwes on the head, Cary Elwes said, actually hit me for real. And he did it so hard that he knocked him out and lacerated the top of his head. And they had to shut down the rest of the day shooting because Cary Elwes went to the hospital to get treated. It's just like, well, maybe don't do that. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Exactly. What are we doing here? Should I give any other thoughts, any other notes, anything else to say about The Princess Bride?
My last note is people in masks cannot be trusted.
One of the reviews of the people I follow on Letterboxd said, I really thought Zorro was in this movie. He looks like Zorro. He just looks like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's Zorro. It's a Zorro costume.
He's an all black clad gentleman in a black mask. Yeah. Nate, what else about this movie? Things you love, things you hate, other notes, anything else? Final thoughts, Princess Bride?
I don't hate anything about this movie. Like, okay. This is in my all-time top 10. Like, I don't know where it is. It's probably, now I feel like I'm talking about Caitlin Clark, like I had to do all week with people online. Like, yeah, she's great. I don't know where she is in my top 10, top 5. I'm not going to say she's the GOAT right now because you have to look at historical context.
Longevity.
Yeah. And people called me a hater for having nuance and perspective. but I feel like this, I could slot this anywhere from 10 all the way up to, you know, 4 or 5 for me. Like
Wait, what are your top three?
My top three all time movies would probably be Malcolm X by Spike Lee. And it's a very wild top three. We've got Malcolm X, Captain America Civil War, because that's my favorite. Did I say Civil War? No, I'm sorry. Captain America Winter Soldier. That to me is like the epitome. Like, it's the Marvel movie that transcends being a Marvel movie, because I think it's just a good movie. And then my third favorite movie of all time is Blazing Saddles.
Excellent.
So just a wild top three.
That's a wild top three, but that's a good desert island top three.
Yeah.
You know what? We talk about that a lot. You get three movies on a desert island. Like, I mean, that's, you get a little bit of everything.
Yep. We get the action. We get history. Yep. We get racially based comedy. but yeah, like I really, really like this movie, man. I feel like it's of a time, but it's timeless. That should be the tagline for Dwayne The Rock Johnson's Princess Bride in Space. Like, I love the performances. I feel like, again, it's a really sweet movie that has a lot of heart, but it's not saccharine. It's not overly sweet. It's not something where it's like, yeah, I'm done with this because it feels like it's leaning too much to the kiddie side of things. And, you know, like I said, when I watch it with my nieces, it's something I can watch with them where I'm like, I don't have to send the little one out of the room because there's something that's not appropriate for a kid. So it's that movie that just walks the line and appeals to, I think, a lot of different audiences. And it's funny. It's funny and it's got heart. And I really enjoy this movie. like I said, I haven't watched it since last year with my nieces, but just talking about it, or since this week and then last year. But I think it's going to go back into my regular rotation because I've got a regular rotation of physical media that currently includes Black Dynamite, Tropic Thunder, and Black Panther on DVD, even though I've got it on Disney Plus anytime I want. I have it on DVD because you never know when the man is going to take it from us. Amen. So I think Princess Bride is going to enter that rotation going forward because I just love kind of its heart. And I think maybe that's why it can't be made today, guys, because I feel like if you made a movie with this kind of heart today without that context of the nostalgia, maybe your audience doesn't buy it because people are too cynical these days, fellas.
That's true. That's very true. Very good point.
Well, I'm very glad that we got to talk about this with you, Nate. But before we go, we got a couple of games to play. First up, we have to watch the YouTube trailer. The Princess Bride, official trailer number one, Wallace Shawn movie. What? 1987.
The
HD.
Real star.
I mean, sure. Posted by Rotten Tomatoes. Classic trailers. 59,000 views. Very few views.
Yeah, that feels strange, doesn't it?
Yeah. But this is, you know, this is our boy. This is Rotten Tomatoes, classic trailers. You know what I mean? So,
oh, official trailer number two underneath it has 1.6 million views.
Should we watch that one instead or no?
We can do either one.
Let's just watch the first one. Let's see what this is.
Yeah, fine.
All right. Let me know when you both have it queued up.
All right.
I'm ready whenever Nate is.
All right. Wallace Shawn classic trailer.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play.
In 1972, Academy Award winner William Goldman wrote The Princess
Bride.
It took 15 years before director Rob Reiner...
Feels like a Pepperidge Farm commercial.
I can tell you already. Terrible trailer. It was
worth the
wait. Yeah. It's very wordy.
Is thrilling, exciting, it is. We're getting a history lesson on the movie.
People Magazine calls it an instant classic. The Good Time Movie.
People Magazine.
Just the right. I don't think I would have seen this movie. Heartbreak.
The entire cast is superb, but the funniest is Billy Crystal.
The funniest is Billy Crystal. See, they love it too.
Oh my god. I think we're going to have to watch trailer number 2 because this is embarrassing. I mean, like let's finish this one out, but like
two big thumbs up. Have fun
storming the castle. Carol King from Kimmy Schmidt and a bunch of other stuff.
That was a terrible trailer.
That was only a minute long. My Wesley will always
come for me. Your Wesley. I guess maybe this...
Are these like TV commercials?
Yeah, these are like TV commercials or something, aren't they? But you've never seen any... Or like the trailers that play at the beginning of a VHS. Of a different VHS.
The second trailer's better.
Yeah.
It's to the point. We didn't need all that exposition.
This is a 30-second spot. All right, pause this. We gotta stop watching this one. Hold on. All right, we're going to watch The Princess Bride. Okay, importantly, Princess Bride official trailer number 2, Wallace Shawn movie. 1980. I mean, they keep in mind the important part here. 1.6 million views. Let's see if this is any better. I mean, at least this one's widescreen. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the 4x3 cropped TV version.
Okay.
Let me know when you guys have this one queued up.
I'm queued up and ready when Nate is.
Give me 1 second. I'm recovering from that last masterpiece
of
a trailer.
Yeah.
That was, like, look, I don't scream these because, like, the point is, like, to see the, like, watch it, like, with fresh eyes, but, like...
In 1972, William Goldman wrote a story. That story has now been turned into a screenplay, which has been turned into a movie.
A guy you don't know.
All right, I am... Come on, YouTube. All right.
We just got... I will read this again on the next episode. We just got a comment on our Los Bandoleros episode 37 from, like, forever ago. YouTube, Billy Swales just says... This is bullshit. I don't know if he is mad at us for not being the movie. I don't know if who knows, but
bullshit.
All right,
this is bullshit. Okay.
I'm ready for this magnificent Wallace Shawn trailer.
We're going to try this again. The Princess Bride. Also, Wallace Shawn not in the first trailer, right? Like he was not in the title of the thing, whatever. All right. 3, 2, 1, play.
Grandfather's here. Okay, yeah, this is a trailer.
Okay, I gotta pay better attention to the number of views. I saw official trailer number 1.
Okay, a new film by Rob Reiner.
It was was the book my father used to read to me.
I mean, like, that's all you need. Like, that's going to get butts in seats. Soul casting Columbo in your movie.
That's a trailer voice.
This is a trailer.
Mowitz.
They do love Billy Crystal.
I do love how many times she's like, I'm going to kill myself. Like, just, I cannot get on. I cannot go on.
How can you be sure?
This is true love.
Oh, no. Is this a kissing book?
No. Actually, there was a lot of tragedy.
No.
Peril. And revenge.
Prepare to die.
Oh, they didn't blow the line for you in the trailer. I like that.
Oh, there's the star of the star of the movie. Well, that's spoiled.
But I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder, and Gilda to frame for it.
I will say that, like, 80s Muzak scoring to this trailer is particularly bad.
Yes.
Yeah. It really changes the tone.
Have fun storming the castle.
More Billy Crystal, man.
This isn't great either. I mean, it's
better,
but it's not great.
It's a long trailer as well.
It's as real as the feelings you feel.
No kissing again.
Someday you may not mind so much.
The Princess Bride. Not just your basic, average, everyday, ordinary.
I see why this movie made no money.
I know. Like, there is something like, you know, when, and I don't know if this was a consideration by Josh and Michael, but they give us a list of 80s cult movies, right? And I'm just like, is this like everybody loves this movie? I look at the numbers. I'm like, didn't
everybody fucking loves this movie? And it didn't make a lot of money
because the trailers were so terrible.
I blame the trailers. They could have made a fucking killing. Wouldn't have taken them 70 years to do it either.
We're gonna play the letterbox game. So for reference sake, Mad Max Fury Road, starring the new Princess Buttercup Charlize Theron, has been seen by 1.9 million people. The Princess Bride from 1987. Starring Wallace Shawn, has been seen by how many people?
We got to push a mil. I got to start at a mil.
1 mil.
You're starting at a mil? I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm going to go a little bit lower because I feel like this is the movie that people love, but I don't know if they're taking their time to log in.
Fair point.
It might be a little bit older than the login demographic. I'm going to say, give me 750K.
You're both pretty close, but it's in between those two numbers, between 750 and a million. One more guess each.
875.
I'm going to go Price is Right. 876.
Okay. With that bid, Nate wins. It's 909. So, Joe, you were close both times. 909 right there. Average rating of a 4.0, most commonly rated a 5, then a 4, then a 4.5. How many of those 909,000 people have this movie in their top 4 favorite films of all time?
Oh, God. It has to be something bananas. Even if it's this old, it has to be bananas. Can we say, I'll start at like 10,000.
Okay, Nate?
Out of 909,000?
In a possible world, 909,000 people on Letterboxd have this in their top 4. I think, although maybe that counts doubles, I don't know. But yes.
I think it's more. Okay. Joe, you said 10,000?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to say 25K.
Nate, closer, but somewhere in the middle. Between 10 and 25. Ooh. And I'll say Nate is closer.
18,750. It rounds up. So just give me 18,000. That's an insane fucking number. That might be the highest we've ever
seen.
You're
going 18. I'll go 20.
Yeah.
21,000. I mean, Fury Road is 26,000. There's a bunch that have a bunch, but like 21,000 people
for a movie this old. You know what I mean? That's insane, dude.
What I thought was very cool was someone we know, someone related to the podcast. Mrs. Wes has us in their top 4 favorite films of all time. M. Hampton Photo on Letterboxd has The Princess Bride as her number 2 favorite movie of all time.
I know at least one other one.
What's her number 1? You know it.
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future number one. Back to the Future number one. The Princess Bride number two. Number four is a Letterboxd all-star, one of the biggest movies of all time. I will tell you, it has been seen by 3.2 million people out of 70,000 people have it in the top four.
Mm.
From the 90s.
From the 90s.
A beloved film from the 90s. 3.2 million times viewed. 70,000 people, including Emily, have it in their top four favorite films of all time.
Like The Matrix? Give me something. Mm-hmm. Give me a little bit of something.
Huge movies from the 90s. You made a guess. That's wrong, Nate. Take a guess.
I'm going to say, given that we've got The Princess Bride and what was the other movie she had? Back to the Future.
She loves Back to the Future.
Okay, so
yeah.
I'm trying to stay in that lane.
Yes.
So from the 90s, I'm going to say, I don't even know if this was the 90s or early 2000s. Mrs. Doubtfire.
No.
That would have been awesome, though.
This director's most famous movie, probably his best movie. He's also a Letterboxd all-star director.
Okay. Pulp Fiction?
Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah, Emily's number four favorite film. Yeah.
That's a great one. Yes. And like 90s, all the things. Yep. Yeah. Huge, huge movie.
Number three is a movie from the 60s. Ooh. That also became the name of a pop song in the 90s.
Okay, okay.
Movie. Casbah, Rock the Casbah.
No.
A movie from the 60s that became a pop song in the 90s.
Oh, also, speaking of Rock the Casbah, it reminded me, Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits did the music in The Princess Bride.
Oh, cool.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. Yeah.
Movie from the 60s, from 1961, became a name of a pop song in the 90s. And I said, what about
Breakfast at Tiffany's?
1961, directed by Blake Edwards. Emily's top four, Back to the Future, The Princess Bride, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Pulp Fiction.
Thank you, Mrs. West.
Is she affiliate with the podcast, but a gettable top four. And also, honestly, pretty solid.
A pretty good top four.
Solid. Never seen Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I have. It's a good
movie.
It's also got some wildly racist stuff. like
as you did in the 60s.
Powerfully Mickey Rooney, famously white actor, playing Mr. Yunioshi.
Oh no.
So if you want to see Shout out to you, Mrs. West, and shout out to you, Nate, for joining us. Thank you once again for joining us to talk about The Princess Bride. Let the listeners know what you got going on, what's new in your world, podcasts, other projects, where to follow you, what do you have, what do you want to plug?
Yes, well, the one thing I will not be doing is watching Mickey Rooney portray an Asian man on the screen. It's not going down,
you
fellas.
You always could.
But thank you for having me, man. It's always a blast whenever we get to link up, despite our schedules. So, I appreciate the invite. And again, I thank you guys, Joey in particular, because when Joey first shot me the idea, I said, okay, cool, I'm in. Just let me know a few months ahead of time. And Joey has been very good at reminding me.
He's the best.
I feel like Joey works at a dentist's office or something, because he's very good at letting you know when appointments are coming.
Six-month postcard?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. And we always have a good time. And listeners, this will not be the last time you hear us, either here at Too Fast, Too Forever, or on the Rocky Maivia Picture Show, which is still alive. It's Schrodinger's podcast, guys. As long as I don't say it's canceled, it lives forever. So I'm just going to put this out here as a tease. I don't know how much crossover. I know there's some crossover between our shows, but I don't know how much crossover there is from the wrestling side of things, listening to Too Fast, even though I plug you guys whenever I can. We will be doing an episode. This is an exclusive, ladies and gentlemen. Me and the Joes will be back with Too Fast. Not with Too Fast, because we're already here with Too Fast. We will be back.
We'll be back with Too Fast next week.
Yes, I hope you're back next week. We'll be back with the Rocky Maivia Picture Show this summer for an episode.
Oh.
Reviewing
summer blockbuster.
Summer blockbuster like no other. Get Independence Day out of here. Get Armageddon out of here. Get Bad Boys 5 out of here.
Jaws who?
Jaws who? We're talking about Baywatch, The Rock, Zac Efron, a lot of other people. I haven't watched that movie in a while.
It's good. I don't know how it is.
Dario.
Yes.
We enjoyed it when we watched
it. Is our girl Vanessa Hudgens in the new Bad Boys? Do we know? Is she back?
I don't know if she is.
I don't know.
I don't know if she's back. I actually kind of like the last Bad Boys, though, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
But we will not be talking Bad Boys unless Dwayne The Rock Johnson shows up in the Bad Boys franchise.
Bad Boys Ride or Die, Vanessa Hudgens not only in it, third build.
Okay, cool.
Also in it, Tiffany Haddish. Ray Seahorn from Better Call Saul.
Okay.
Joey Pants.
I'm glad Tiffany Haddish is back because she got blacklisted for a minute. She was in everything for a minute, and then she was gone for a minute. Like, she was in every movie I saw that one summer and then gone forever, and then now she's back again.
And most importantly, Reggie is back in Bad Boys 4. For more from me, who is not in Bad Boys 4, you can check me out on Twitter at @in8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Be sure to check out not only the Rocky Mountain Via Picture Show at Post Wrestling, but also the Nubian Wrestling Advocates. Again, I don't know when this episode comes out, but by the time you're listening to this, our WrestleMania review should be up. It was an amazing WrestleMania, the biggest WrestleMania of all time, some would say, featuring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Cody Rhodes and Becky Lynch and all sorts of wonderful people.
John Cena shows up.
Spoilers.
Yes, spoiler alert.
I mean, WrestleMania happened. It was on Peacock. There's not even pay-per-views anymore. Yes. You saw it.
It's the premium live events. Please, Joe. Please, use the proper terminology. Post Wrestling is where you can find me. You can also find me at the Kings of Sport. KingsofSport.com, Cospod on Twitter. We recently did an episode about the women's basketball March Madness because it was...
Which was a blast. Yeah. We were rooting for UConn. We watched all the women's
18
games.
Million people watched the championship game. At one point, it got up to 23 million people watching the championship game. So we spent a lot of time talking about the explosion of women's basketball and also some of the coverage from the media side because the media does not know how to deal in nuance. And it showed during the March Madness for the ladies. You can check that out. Also, we've got a Patreon, patreon.com/thekingsofsports. So while you are supporting Joe and Joey with their Patreon, just cross the street a quarter mile at a time and support the Kings of Sport Patreon. $5 gets you in the door. If you want to pay more, we won't stop you. Over 300 hours of audio, video, talking about sports, pop culture, politics, pro wrestling, movies. We've got MCU reviews up, and we've got our newest show, The Avengers Initiative. Which is a MCU-related show featuring myself, Brittany Monet, and Jennifer Smith. And basically, we're talking about Marvel and these Marvel movies and TV shows and characters from a female-led perspective because, guys, we've had our say, and sometimes we've said too much. So I am just the passenger. I am just the passenger on this trip with these ladies, and it's a fun ride. One episode's out. We've got another one coming out talking about The Marvels, which is a movie that I really like. Like, it's not perfect, but I think a lot of people crapped on it unnecessarily.
They absolutely did. I don't think they saw it either.
Yeah, they probably didn't see it either, correct, because it was too woke for them. But yeah, for everything else, just follow me on Twitter at @in8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. And again, Joe and Joey, always good to catch up with you guys. Good to see your faces. Like I said, I think I might have seen your faces before.
You did. You have. But at least once.
It's been so long that I don't remember. But now I can burn your faces into my mind. And much like Wesley and Buttercup, our love for each other will last forever, fellas.
Is this another kissing podcast?
Hey, you might like that kind of podcast when you're older.
So our next episode, Joe, on the main feed is another Life in the Fast Lane, where we are finishing the movie Too Fast, Too Furious and starting the credits in Too Fast, Too Furious. I think it's a 30-30 split, 50-50 split, whatever, 30-30 seconds.
Yeah.
Before then, though, the patrons will get the first official bonus episode this lap, Brian's pick of personal best, a movie Joe and I were like, Brian,
why?
What are you doing? So if you want to know the whole conversation of that episode, TooFastTooForever.com. But for all things Too Fast, Too Forever, go to CageClub.me, Facebook.com/TooFastTooForever, or at TooFastTooForever on all the platforms. Email us. We'll read on the next episode, family@CageClub.me. Check out our Patreon page at toofasttooforever.com in our store, cageclub.me/shop, and come back next week for Too Fast, Too Furious Minute 101, and on Monday for the patrons, personal best. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too.
And that was Nate Milton, and we will tell you all about it
when we see you.